Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll get an update from the recent legislative session from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and we'll talk to some Civil War reenactors. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
As we prepare to celebrate this 4th of July, reflect with me for a moment. What does the 4th of July mean to you? Does it mean a day off from work, picnics, patriotic concerts, and fireworks? For many, it's an opportunity to wear red, white, and blue, and to unfurl the American flag. For some Americans, the day is an opportunity for a mini vacation with family and friends. Between the lemonade, barbecues, and summer games, what's lost to many and remembered by few are the origins and significance of this special day, this most patriotic of patriotic holidays. The 4th of July celebrates an important birth date, the birth of our nation and the declaration of the independence of the 13 colonies as a separate but united states. This revolutionary declaration espoused a government for the people, by the people. It stated, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Instrumental in our nation's fight for independence was the Colonial Militia, the predecessors of the Colonial Army and today's National Guard. These citizen soldiers fought a valiant fight, ensuring the formation of an independent state and laying the foundation for the National Guard's role in future conflicts. This 4th of July, while we wear our red, white, and blue, enjoy the company of our family and friends, observe in awe the flashing of fireworks, or pause with our hand over our heart while the national anthem is played, let us not forget that freedom is not free. As Franklin Delano Roosevelt once said, it is the truest sense. Freedom cannot be bestowed. It must be achieved. As we celebrate this 4th of July, let's pause for a moment and remember the men and women who are serving this country today, securing that freedom just as our country's forefathers did. Have a happy and safe 4th of July.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Mike McElhenney, the Legislative Director from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Mike, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here as always.
Mike, we had you on the show in December 4th, I think, 2011. I'm sure we've had you on since, but when you were on that day, we met and we talked about your military career. Can you just fill us in a little bit for our listeners and bring them up to date? When were you in and when did you serve?
Sure, Tom. I, like many veterans, enlisted in the military right after high school. I went into the infantry initially, but then later found a higher calling to special forces and spent 21 years in the military. One of our sort of claims to fame that my particular team did in early 2001 was go into southern Afghanistan. We took current President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan in and began an insurgency in southern Afghanistan.
And that, of course, led him to power, and he's just getting out of power now. And I'm not sure, have they reported who won the last round of elections over there?
You know, Tom, quite honestly, I have not been tracking that as closely as I probably should, so I don't know.
And that particular mission was, unfortunately, one of your last missions, wasn't it?
It was. For our team, unfortunately, we met with a friendly bomb. 2,000-pounder came in that morning in the locality of our position, and it essentially rendered us inoperative. Many of us were medevaced. Unfortunately, a few were killed.
And for our listeners, we're going to talk about legislative update today, but if you go to Minnesota Military Radio and check in the archives, go to December of 2011, the story of what happened to Mike on that bad day. It had to be a bad day in your life, Mike, is all there, and it's a very fascinating story. And you haven't let up for more than a couple of days, have you? You've just charged right ahead.
Right. And you have to do that, Tom. We hear a lot about resiliency within the military. And the fact is we all enlist. It's a volunteer service nowadays. And, you know, there are realities of war and the job that we do. So, but, you know, good things happen, bad things happen, life goes on, and you've got to continue with life in whatever condition you're in.
And you've done it, and we've had a lot of fun watching you. How did you get to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
Well, I there was an opportunity in the communications department that I applied to after I had retired. Started with the communications department, was there for a short while, and their legislative director was actually leaving, and the opportunity came open to go move into that position. I happen to have a political science degree, and so it was kind of a good fit, and so I started, hit the ground running like many things, and fortunately, I've been successful, at least enough for the commissioner to keep me around.
and he's done that. Now, I'm wondering now, is it more dangerous to go on a mission in Afghanistan, or is it more dangerous to go up to the state legislature when they're in session?
Well, that's a funny question. Sometimes there's less frustration in a combat zone than back here in Minnesota.
Well, you don't have to follow up on that anymore, Mike. You have to go over there and get some work done. But seems to me that being a non-political person, which I am, going up there and trying to get some things done and watching our state legislature in action could be a little frustrating from time to time. Now, let's talk about last year. I don't want to get you in any trouble with that. The 2014 legislative session wrapped up on Friday night, May 16th. And you were up there with a whole list of things that that we wanted to try to accomplish on behalf of our veterans here in Minnesota. How'd we do?
Well, overall, Tom, veterans did well. You may recall this was sort of titled the Unsession. It was a much shorter session than typical. And so with that, things were really crammed into a shorter time span. And so there was a lot of business that needed to be done in a shorter period of time. As far as veterans go, it was typical in that in any given year, we'll see in the neighborhood of 100 to 150 bills relative to veterans issues come out. And you really kind of cut those in half when there's a companion bill. So there's about 75 items that you're tracking and trying to watch in committees. But, you know, by and large, a good portion of those made it through and survived in one form or another. And that's typically how it goes. You've heard the old saying, making sausage. And so you kind of take all these ideas and grind them into a larger theme that's palatable. And so we did pretty well.
We're speaking with Mike McElhenney, the legislative director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and Minnesota Military Radio. Mike, did we have any unsession activities?
Right, Tom. The Unsession, the theme of the Unsession was kind of to reduce old statute to make government more streamlined and efficient. And, you know, there's over 27,000 pages of statute in Minnesota. And so one of the things that was trying to be accomplished is to reduce those numbers. But what's unique with Minnesota Veterans Affairs, you know, over 13 years of war, we were still sort of ramping up. We didn't have any great areas that we could reduce or take away from, if you will. We're still ramping up. You've heard the commissioner say time and time again that the tsunami of veterans is hitting. Everyone that serves will eventually be a veteran. They have been transitioning for over 13 years. We know at Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs that there's over 66,000 veterans with a home address of Minnesota that have served since 9/11. And so for our department, we're still ramping up. So we didn't really have a lot of unsession issues this year.
So the tsunami that I've heard the commissioner talk about, what he was really talking about there, I'm guessing, is Vietnam was many years ago. I was more than 40 years since I got back from Cameron Bay. And then the first Gulf War was 20 years ago. But then, of course, 9/11, 2001 hit. And we had so many more veterans, so many more service people deploying and going overseas and coming back. And the tsunami is that all of those folks now getting out of the service, looking for help if they were injured, if they need VA care, if they need the GI Bill. All of a sudden, seems like there's a whole surge of veterans that need some help, and maybe we weren't ready for it.
Right. And with every new era there, as you well know, there's new technology, there's new techniques, there's new capabilities out there to assist veterans, be that in educational realms or in counseling realms and healthcare realms. So one of the things that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs does is, as a state agency, as a state, we can implement laws and change much faster than the federal government. It's easier to get the legislature to understand and the governor to understand the issues facing Minnesota veterans and to make the necessary changes much quicker than trying to get, you know, 535 congressional members on the same sheet of music to make changes. So we can do that more rapidly at the state level. And that's what we try to do, is fill any gaps that perhaps our federal partners are a little slow on so that we can address the contemporary issues in a timely fashion.
So are we pretty well up to date, Mike? Are we taking care of this current surge of veterans?
You know, Tom, there's always work to be done. There's a lot of organizations out there that we listen to very seriously. There's the Commander's Task Force. I know you've had many of them in as guests in the past. Just a whole host of veteran service organizations and those that support veterans and the military affairs. So everyone understands, or there's always new issues that maybe aren't fitting the need to be tweaked. And so that's what we try to focus on and do the right thing on behalf of the veterans.
Mike, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to dig into some of the bills that passed and some of the good work that we got done in the 2014 session. We're speaking with Mike McElhenney, the legislative director from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been speaking with Mike McElhenney, the legislative director from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Mike, we were talking about the legislative session that just wrapped up on Friday night, May 16th. And it was a short session, a bonding session, I understand, is what they refer to it. Is that correct?
That's correct, Tom. There's Minnesota operates in a biennium. That's a two-year time frame. First year is the budget year. Second year is the bonding year. But, you know, more often than not, there will be a supplemental budget in the bonding year, and there'll potentially be some bonding items in the budget year. And so for Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, this year wasn't that huge of a deal for us, quite honestly, because we were riding the wave of last year. Not in the bonding cycle of the biennium, we were able to achieve $18.9 million, which is a state share of a $54 million project to complete the Minneapolis campus phase three. So we were very happy last year. And this year, as we moved into the bonding cycle, what we asked for, like most agencies, is some asset preservation dollars. And then there's a few particular requests that we had. When it was all said and done, we didn't necessarily get everything we asked for. We understand, you know, that's the way it is. There's priorities state government has to choose. But we were, much like many agencies, we asked for what we thought we needed. And unfortunately, this year, we just didn't get it all. But what we did receive is over $2 million, or actually $2 million in asset preservation. And what that will be used for is just general upkeep of our 50-plus buildings. We've got buildings that range in age. Engineers will tell you what's going on with those buildings, what the necessary maintenance requirements are, and then we'll submit that to the legislature so that we can get some funds to upkeep those buildings. We also received $700,000 for some deep tunnel renovations on the Minneapolis campus. And the deep tunnel houses some infrastructure for the entire campus. It is exactly what it sounds like. It's a very deep tunnel. It's very old. So there's some water infiltration issues, a little bit of rust on some of the hangers of the pipes and these sorts of things. So we have to keep that in good repair. And so there's a lot of work that needed to be done there. So the legislature and the governor were able to achieve that for us. So we're very excited about that. Now, relative to veterans on kind of a broader view, there was a couple of veterans memorials that received some state funding this year. There's a veterans memorial in Edina, as well as North St. Paul. And then there's also some funding appropriated for the Hmong Lao Memorial that will be housed on the Capitol grounds in the near future. So as far as bonding goes, I think Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs did fairly well. And again, you know, we're very happy from what we received last year. Some people have inquired about that. You may recall the Commander's Task Force was in here talking about that Phase 3 project.
I'll always remember Don Pancake sitting over there pounding on the table saying, I want Phase 3 done.
Right. It was very important. And again, you know, that project is due to start in 2016. We've just started demolition on Phase 2. It's when people talk about that, they kind of wonder what it is. It's a very large building broken down into a couple of sections, 17 North and 17 South. And so 17 North is Phase 2 and 17 South is Phase 3. And there's a couple of adjoining buildings with that. So we will we've started Phase 2 demolition, and they'll rebuild that. And 2016 will begin Phase 3. And so that was the funding that we achieved last session. We'll wait for the 65% of the federal share to come in. I think in August, we'll see a good portion of that, and everything should be fine and smooth.
So we're ready to go. We've got the state portion. Wait for the feds to fund it, and then give her heck and get that campus finished.
That's correct.
Anything else that you were working on besides the bonding over there?
Well, yes. Again, this was, as typical, there's lots of veterans issues that come up throughout the session, and there were a lot of good achievements this year, and a lot of these veterans' ideas, for I'm sure the general public knows, but they're not always from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. They come from our stakeholders, the veteran service organizations, individuals, as well as legislators around the state. So some of the I'll briefly run through them, but there were some good achievements made in the area of veteran-owned small business for quite some time. There's been sort of a barrier, if you will, in veterans achieving certification for their businesses in the state of Minnesota. There's a process where veteran-owned small businesses can be certified at the federal level, and that takes quite a bit of time. There's other demographics within the state that can receive a certification for their businesses and then compete for state contracts. And so that's something the veterans wanted to do for quite some time, and they made some ground this session. And we know as we move forward, we're going to have to seek someone to essentially do that certification, funding for that person or that position, as well as there's going to be some new rules that are going to need to be made around that process.
We're speaking with Mike McElhenney, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Mike, we've had some folks on the show, and I've gone through the process to become service-disabled, veteran-owned small business, and it's kind of like getting naked in front of Congress. But I certainly hope that the state comes up with some kind of system to help our veteran-owned businesses in Minnesota be qualified to bid on projects. But what else are you working on?
Well, there is some achievements made in the realm of employment under the Peace Officer Licensing Exam. We've been working on that for a couple of years. And what was achieved this year is they've reduced the qualifications or the time in service, the education level required to take the state reciprocity exam. So veterans now that have served 2 years of experience in law enforcement and a military occupational specialty and have 2 years of education in that field can take the test, the reciprocity test, and be prepared for a job in law enforcement when they get out of the military. So that's actually a really good thing that happened. The state also created a mechanism or passed a law where veterans can come to Minnesota and go to the MNSCU schools at in-state tuition rates. That was kind of a national initiative that's been floating around for a while, and that was a big plus for the state of Minnesota. What's interesting is MNSCU is a very good partner of Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and veterans in general, and so they were actually already doing this through in-house policies, but now it's been codified in law. So we're very excited about that.
So if we get some retired veterans to move back to Minnesota and spend their money here,
hopefully
that's good for the economy.
Right. Absolutely. There's some training that's been going around within the first responder community to deal with veterans in crisis. That's a really good program. It's a new program started last year. So they're able to achieve some funding to ensure that keeps going so that the law enforcement and first responders – are educated and aware of issues the veterans may be facing when they return from the battlefield.
Mike, did any new laws come out of the Veterans Subcommittee on Housing?
Actually, they did. I'm glad you brought that up, Tom. The Veterans Subcommittee on Housing was a subcommittee that was created last year, actually last summer. Speaker Thiessen provided leadership in creating this subcommittee, and the goal was to look at veterans' housing issues here in the state and determine what it is they need and how we compare with other states. You can ask 10 different people what their perspective or definition of veterans' housing is, and they may give you 10 different answers, anywhere from specialty care and long-term housing, nursing care. It could be affordable housing. It could be homeless housing. It could be transitional housing with supportive services. So all those nuances fall under the realm of veterans housing. And so the subcommittee came up with a lot of recommendations, and one that actually made it through the session and into law was some money, a grant to public or private entities that want to look into the community and determine what they think they need in specific areas, because the problems or the housing issues are not necessarily the same across the state, and we know that. And so we're going to use this grant to seek information from the veterans to see what they want, to substantiate the needs, as well as the communities and the different government entities to help us, you know, guide us into the future. Because again, we know that veterans, and the low estimate, looking at the state population, 28% of the state's 65-year-olds and older are veterans. So about a third of the aging population in the state are veterans. So we have, you know, not only a duty as a state agency, but a real interest in making sure that the housing needs and the elderly health care relative to veterans is in place, at least from what we can do from a state perspective.
Mike, we're about out of time. I hope you can come back on this fall and tell us about what your plans are for working with the 2015 legislative session. But I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
This is Mike McElhenney, the Legislative Director from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. In a moment, we'll be back to learn about our Civil War reenactors. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll meet with some Minnesota Civil War reenactors. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
This week, families, friends, and communities will celebrate the independence of our country and the freedoms we enjoy as we celebrate the 4th of July. The signers of the Declaration of Independence did not take their signatures lightly. Here we are, hundreds of years later, with the same purpose and promise that guides our country. At 4th of July celebrations, I encourage you to take a moment and look back on the courage and wisdom of our founding fathers and be renewed in our shared commitment to those core values that brought our nation to life back then and guide us now. Take a few minutes to remember what the 4th of July is about and to remind ourselves how fortunate we are to be Americans. Happy 4th of July.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Stephen Osman, who is a graduate of St. Olaf College and recently retired as senior historian with the Minnesota Historical Society. He managed historic Fort Snelling for over 3 decades and actively researches, speaks, and writes about Minnesota's role in the Civil War and the Dakota War. Stephen served as a U.S. Army Reserve in psychological operations at Fort Snelling, is an elected fellow of the Company of Military Historians, and currently serves on boards of the Minnesota Military Museum, the Friends of Fort Snelling, and the scholarly journal Minnesota's Heritage. Stephen, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be back.
Stephen, we're going to talk today about a couple of things, reenactments and a project called the Tombstone Project. And I know that you you brought a reenactor along with you today. Can you introduce him for us?
My good friend Kurt Klotzbeker is here, and Kurt has been heading up our Tombstone Project, replacing the gravestones of First Minnesota members, graves that have been lost, destroyed, no stone, whatever. Very important mission that our reenactment group has had for over 30 years now.
Kurt, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Kurt, I understand you went to Marquette University Dental School and graduated in 1978, and you served in the military.
4 years in the Navy as a dentist, yes.
And did you enjoy your time in the Navy?
It was wonderful. I spent 2 years at Great Lakes and then 2 years overseas at Tsugi, Japan.
And when did you join the 1st Minnesota Volunteer Infantry Reenactment Group? That's a mouthful.
I started in 2008.
What drew you to that, Kurt?
I had ancestors on both sides of the Civil War. I've always had an interest in the period. And just a love for history, and I think that probably reflects what most people have when they join our group, is they love the history and they love the period and they want to know more about it.
Stephen, I think a lot of our listeners have seen reenactors out at Fort Snelling and other places, right, but they probably don't know anything about the infrastructure, the background. Where do they practice? Where do they go out and do this?
Well, first of all, if you're going to be a reenactor, you've got to decide what you want to do. And Civil War reenacting has really always been the largest of these tens of thousands of people involved in that aspect of the hobby. But there's also 20th century reenacting. World War II reenacting is very popular, particularly with military vehicles. You can reenact as infantry, cavalry if you have a horse, artillery if you have a cannon. Why do people reenact? Well, I like to think that it's historians who've gone off the deep end. You can read everything. You can see every movie. You can go to all the battlefields. But if you really want to experience what it was like, at least some aspects of what it was like, put on a wool uniform, shoulder a musket, carry that pack, sleep on the ground, and pretty soon you'll come to discover the sacrifice that those guys really gave us 150 years ago to preserve the U.S. as one nation.
So, Kurt, apparently our historian thinks you went off the deep end.
Yes, you could. My wife definitely thinks I did, but I've always enjoyed it. And as Stephen says, you get to understand the real what they went through. When you tear a cartridge open, there are paper cartridges. You have to get your teeth right down on the powder, or you won't be able to pour the powder down the barrel of your musket. And when you do that, you will end up with gunpowder in your mouth, which is very salty, and you start to understand why those individuals were so thirsty.
That makes sense to me. Now, Kurt, you got involved in this in 2008. I understand it's not free. It costs a little money to go out and get the shoes and the uniform, and you all go out and buy those things yourself?
Yes. The First Minnesota has suggestions on where we can get authentic material. And we pride ourselves on trying to be as authentic as possible. The equipment, the actual veteran from the 1st Minnesota would probably be not able to tell the difference, except with the weapon we use now is a little heavier than what they had because it's a little heavier steel. But otherwise, we look pretty much exactly like they looked.
So if you're interested in history and you're interested in the 1st Minnesota, you don't take this decision lightly. You're pretty serious about this, aren't you?
It is an involvement of time and a fair amount of treasure to want to do this, but it is the best way to understand what they actually went through.
Kurt, the particular group that you belong to, I understand, has been around for 40 years?
Yes, it has. Stephen is one of the founding members, actually, and so he knows quite a bit about that. But it is one of the oldest reenactment groups I'm aware of in the First Civil War reenacting.
And how often during the course of a year do you participate in reenactments?
That would entirely depend on the individual. We have some events that our group goes to as a single unit, and then others that we can go to if we wish or if we have the time. And then I also belong to a group out in the East Coast, which invites me to come to groups, smaller events that we would not normally get to. So I fly in for those.
Stephen, would it be fair to say that the easiest way to experience or watch reenactments would be in the summertime out at Fort Snelling?
Well, those reenactors are paid to be there. They're tour guides who are dressed up. And, of course, 7 days a week during the summer months, there's a lot of activity out at historic Fort Snelling. I should know. I spent my whole career there, and they're still doing that every day out there, particularly for school groups in the spring and in the fall. But First Minnesota meetings are also open to the public, and the group meets the first Tuesday of every month at the newly restored Boy Scout building, the old riding stable at Fort Snelling, Building 201. People drive by it on their way to the airport right along Highway 55. We meet at 7 o'clock on Tuesday evenings, first Tuesday of the month, and anybody can come in and watch us drill, can borrow a musket and drill with us, learn about joining the group, and so forth.
We're speaking with Stephen Osman and Kurt Klotzbeker on Minnesota Military Radio. Kurt, how many members do you have in your reenactment, the First Minnesota Reenactment Group?
I believe we have about 40 active members now, and then we have associate members who wouldn't necessarily join us for reenactments but have an interest in staying in touch.
So what kind of a variance in age would you say is in there with those 40?
Well, I'm 62. I suspect I'm one of the oldest. We have some members who are, I would suspect, less than 20 years old now.
And you've got some that young.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Believe it or not, there are still very young people who are very interested in the period.
So some of them come from college. Some of them are maybe veterans, and whoever's interested in history mm-hmm. and the rich history of the First Minnesota.
Yes. And we've had some who have joined us as band members where they can join fairly young as to less than 16 years old. But they have to be 16 before they can carry a musket.
Stephen, just so that our listeners are brought up to date, I was reading a little bit about the First Minnesota again, and Minnesota had just been a state for a short period of time, and there was an astonishing number of men who signed up for that and participated in the Civil War.
Men absolutely rushed off to enlist. So far as we can tell, current research shows that the first enlistee was a man from Anoka named Aaron Greenwald. He was killed in the Battle of Gettysburg, so he did not live to press his claim. The next man who enlisted in St. Paul, or the first man who enlisted in St. Paul, was the guy that actually got the statue in St. Paul by the cathedral, because he managed to survive the war and made his case. Minnesota also had the last surviving Civil War veteran on either side, and his name was Wolson. He was from Duluth and lived until 1956. Which coincidentally is the year that I started collecting Civil War relics.
Stephen, I think I read that even back then, that early, over 20,000 Minnesotans signed up and went off to Civil War and began the legend of the First Minnesota saved the day at Gettysburg.
Well, and that's right, and I think the percentage that enlisted from Minnesota is really important. Minnesota was very young and very male in the years just after it became a state in 1858. Governor Ramsey, our wartime governor, said that over half of the young men of military age and capability actually enlisted during the Civil War. When you compare that to World War I, for example, it was about 6% that went off to serve. So half the young men went off to war in 1861 to 65.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the First Minnesota Reenactment Group and also about the Tombstone Project. We're speaking with Stephen Osman and Dr. Kurt Klotzbeker on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Tom Lyons, founder and principal partner of Phelan Partners Limited, a Twin Cities mergers and acquisitions advisory firm where we help business owners to plan, prepare, and execute a strategy to complete the deal. When I'm not hosting Minnesota Military Radio on this station, I'm hard at work helping business owners with their exit strategies. If you're interested in selling a business, please give us a call at 763-231-4200 at Phelan Partners Limited. We've been bringing buyers and sellers together since 1985, and we'd welcome an opportunity to help you. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined today by Stephen Osman and Dr. Kurt Klotzbeker, and we've been talking about the First Minnesota Reenactment Group, and we're going to talk about the Tombstone Project in just a moment. But, Kurt, I wanted to ask you, are you still looking for members that might be interested in joining your group?
Yes, we're always interested in members and who would like to experience what Civil War life was like and what people went through.
So if any of our listeners are interested in learning more about the First Minnesota Volunteer Infantry Reenactment Group. Just go to Minnesota Military Radio on Facebook, and we'll have links to that group where you can learn a lot more information. Stephen, the second part of the topic today is the Tombstone Project. Can you tell me what that is?
Well, the Tombstone Project actually started in the first few years that the First Minnesota was in existence. In the late 1970s, we discovered that around the Twin Cities area, there were a few First Minnesota gravestones that were damaged. They had been knocked over. They're buried in the ground. They're so effaced by the weather that you can no longer read the inscription. And we found out that the Veterans Administration had a program to replace those for free. And so for a number of years, a small group of us did that. That kind of went into a lapse for a while, and then more recently, Kurt has led an effort to really get out there and do more replacements. In the meantime, the bureaucracy has gotten a lot more difficult, and I know, Kurt, you'll get into that a little bit on exactly what's involved in replacing these missing stones.
So is there a tie-in here to the First Reenactment Group, or just because both of you happened to be part of that and you were interested in the tombstone and you got infected, Kurt?
Well, it was brought up at one of our meetings that we should try to reactivate the Tombstone Project, and I volunteered to help out in that, and along with a number of others. And I volunteered to take Company C of the First Minnesota. There was 156 individuals listed as being members, and I started to track those down to try to follow through with the project. First, we have to figure out where they are buried, and that can be done in different sources or different methods. And then we can go ahead and request a tombstone from the VA if those individuals don't have a tombstone or if they have a tombstone that's illegible.
Stephen, did we have accurate records on the survivors from the First Minnesota that came back from the Civil War?
There are records, but you really have to go out and dig them up. The Grand Army of the Republic was the huge veterans organization after the war. It had over 500,000 members in the 1880s, very strong political organization as well. And they really spearheaded a lot of the efforts to mark the veterans' graves.
So, Kurt, how do you find the grave sites of these veterans of the 1st Minnesota Infantry?
Well, Wayne Jorgensen put out a website listing all the original members of the 1st Minnesota and their bios, and if he knows where they are, at least point it in the right direction, and that's been invaluable. Beyond that, you start looking at Ancestry.com, FamilyTree.com, Find a Grave is an organization that's invaluable to use, and so you locate where they're buried. Sometimes first you have to locate the family members who are around and then find out a location for burial. Once you've located that and determined there is no stone through the cemetery, you can then put in a request to the VA to have a stone provided at no charge, which the cemetery will then place.
So are you, as you find these grave sites and make sure they have the new stones, are you creating a registry or a list of the ones that you've found and taken care of and who's still missing?
Yes, I create that and I pass my information, the things I discover, on to Wayne Jorgensen, who's putting it on his website regarding the First Minnesota. And there's an effort now to create a statewide database of all Civil War veterans and where they're buried.
Kurt, you look like you're really into the reenactment and helping track down these gravesites. It looks like you're having a good time doing this.
It's a lot of fun. It's not easy work. It requires a lot of painstaking research. But it's very rewarding when you can. I just recently had an individual who was buried in Philadelphia, and he's been in an unmarked grave for 152 years. He now has his name above the gravesite and the information that he served in the First Minnesota.
That's got to feel good getting that done.
It's very, very good.
Stephen, we just got about a minute left. The First Minnesota Reactors and the Tombstone Project sounds like wonderful work being done. I don't know where you find guys like Kurt to go out and put in all that time. Have some final thoughts on these items
for
us?
I do, and when I think about this project that some of the members of the First Minnesota do, it's really a matter of who else will help keep these memories alive when a veteran of the First Minnesota or another Minnesota regiment, when their grave is not marked, who else is out there? Family is usually long gone, and so people like Kurt, who really have a passion about this, can tenaciously go out, find the research, and follow the process through. And one thing I would like to remind everybody is the Civil War sesquicentennial did not end with the Battle of Gettysburg. Minnesota had one regiment there. There were 22 Minnesota organizations. There were plenty of actions in 1864, 150 years ago this year, Bryce's Crossroads, the 9th Minnesota. Half their members were captured. Half of them died in Andersonville Prison, a horrible thing. Battle of Nashville, 4 Minnesota regiments involved there. There will be a large contingent of Minnesotans going down there in December 2014 to commemorate that. And for those who want to see a good Civil War exhibit, go up to Camp Ripley.
And for our listeners, when you're going to Lake Country this summer, stop in at Camp Ripley and visit the Minnesota Military Museum. And for all the rest of the listeners, if you're interested in getting involved with the reenactment or with the Tombstone Project, just go to Minnesota Military Radio's Facebook site, and you'll find links to that, and you can join Kurt and Stephen to help with these issues. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
That was Stephen Osman and Kurt Klotzbeker on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here again.
Sergeant Major, I know you travel a lot, and I hear you were up at Camp Ripley this week. Is there anything exciting going on up there?
You know, Tom, there's a lot of stuff going on up there. A lot of our units are doing annual training up there right now, and we have our Norwegian exchange going on up there right now, first time in the summer. And I was just attending a combat medic graduation class up there. That was pretty exciting. But the main reason I was up there, we have what's called a Hero to Hired, or H2H mobile job store. That was pretty exciting to see. They actually go all around the country and try to help some of our soldiers and veterans with employment. It's an employment initiative program really from the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense. And so it's a great program.
Sergeant Major, I know the military likes their acronyms. You've got H2H MJS, and of course that's Hero to Hired Mobile Job Store. What exactly is that, and why are they at Camp Ripley?
You know, the H2H is a Yellow Ribbon-funded program, and it really connects our Guard members and reservists with some good employment in any area of the country. The mission is to help our service members find employment, and then it also educates our community on the benefits of ESGR and Heroes to Hired. The H2H, it also contains everything you need to find a job. This mobile job store was fantastic when I went in there. They have job listings and career exploration tools. They have computers set up right there for our soldiers and airmen to use. And also our spouses can use those as well. They can talk to you about education and training resources, and they have some live and virtual hiring fairs, even a mobile app for some of our soldiers who prefer to do things via apps. A whole bunch of variety of networking opportunities are available there, too. The mobile job store, which is what we had at Camp Ripley, is just an extension of that H2H program. The mobile job store basically is a trailer, and it was stationed right outside the PX, so all of our soldiers that were coming in and out of AT had the ability to just stop over and see it. As I said, it had a bunch of computer stations inside and outside the trailer, and the H2H job website really has it's a multimedia system that allows you to connect with employers who want to hire veterans, so it was great.
Sergeant Major, who was able to benefit from this mobile job store being at Camp Ripley?
You know, a lot of our Minnesota National Guard troops were there, and the spouses that were seeking employment, they were able to use that as well. The trailer even went downrange to one of our units who was training in the field and allowed the soldiers who were still training to go over and try to find some employment. So they really tried to accommodate what we needed there. They were able to come out and visit the mobile job store around their training, after their training, over lunchtime, anytime like that, and get signed up at the beyondtheyellowribbon.org website, which you're very familiar with. And then with the help of the employment transition coordinator that was there, many of our guardsmen received the assistance and resources and support and tools, and they're really propelled in their job search right now.
So once again, there's a link to the Hired H2H, Hero to Hired Mobile Job Store, at our favorite website, beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Sounds like another terrific resource for our soldiers and airmen. Anything else our listeners should know about H2H?
You know, if they missed a mobile job store at Camp Ripley, you can still use the resource. All you have to do is go to the H2H job webpage or, as you just mentioned, the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon website, and they can still take advantage of all those great resources.
Sergeant Major, sounds like you're busy as ever.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks, Tom.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Mike McElhenney, Kurt Klotzbrick, Stephen Osman, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we get an update from Minnesota's American Legion Department Commander, and we'll meet a Navy veteran and talk about World War II in the Pacific. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.